Welcome to the Picture Poem Podcast for November 2009. Coming to you again from Eagle Valley in the high South Wallowas. This week we'll be featuring new texts, poems, metaphysical miniatures, and translations. Read to you and composed by Cliff Grigo. End of mountain summer. The fall winds have again descended upon me, and summer has departed like a beloved headed south. In the middle of the night, the door left open, and leaving not even a short note behind. I wake up in a cold sweat, thinking to myself, shall I follow her? Where on earth could I find her, tending her flocks of sheep on the pampas? Nah, I'm staying put. I'd have to search every tango joint in Rio. She'll come back when she's ready. I'm already digging in. Time to shorten up my long-winded Mediterranean lines into something more like Spartan, tough-minded, laconic couplets. What was it, Dionysus said at Thermopylae, when told the Persians would rain down a cloud of arrows so thick it would black out the sun? Good then, we'll fight in the shade. Hope is the patch of blue sky high above on the mountain before me, as it begins without a trace of wind ever so gently to snow. Hope is the first fish returning in the fall from the sea, knowing that others, against all odds, may soon follow. Hope is the young cellist who already knows all her Bach by heart. Hope is the loud, raucous sound of nutcrackers stashing pine seeds for winter, or the tiny buds of a grouseberry already prepared for the coming spring. Hope is the sound of the British choir boy's voice, echoing off the great stained glass windows to the west, singing vespers as shut. Hope is the labyrinth we all must walk as the silence of nighttime descends upon the land like a benediction. And we reluctantly realize that we too must continue our journey alone, after these few and lucky and rare and all too brief moments of warmth and sharing along the way. Thank you. In this part of the podcast, I'd like to do for you a set of six miniatures, or what I call metaphysical miniatures. These are little thought poems, not poetry in the strictest sense of the word, but rather sayings or aphorisms or epigrams or little meditations on a single idea or theme. I've always said to myself that the essence of poetry is the energy of insight. That's what I want in a poem, is some new way of seeing, some sort of new idea. I might just mention in the background, we have a magnificent set of pieces. The Antonio Vivaldi La Stravaganza is opus 3, a set of 12 concertos. This is a fairly recent recording by the British fiddle player, Baroque violinist Rachel Podger, with a Polish group. It's an excellent recording. So, without further ado, here are our six miniatures. Six miniatures. 1. On the difference between limit and control. Control imposes order from without by projecting the predetermined thought, conditioned by the past, of what should happen. The need to control invariably increases as the disorderly, unexpected side effects of past efforts accumulate. This results in ever greater unnecessary difficulties or complicatedness. In contrast, limit allows order to emerge from within by determining only what at a given moment should not happen. Limit is therefore open to the future and tends strongly towards ever greater freedom and simplicity. 2. The poetry of music evokes the text without the words. The music of poetry evokes the dance without the drum. 3. Nothing fades faster than an art that has descended to the level of being no more than its own commercial. See the flower cluster that advertises itself with showy yet infertile blooms along its periphery. No need to remind it that real nectar must be offered at its center to attract for long. 4. Time, the flowing water said to the constant rock, is but the difference that moves between us. 5. Corruption on the money markets. The higher the degree of abstraction with which the wealth produced by the many is represented, the more likely this wealth will be hoarded and abused by a privileged few. Don't try to control the complex routes and byways of currency. Rather, limit them, and strictly, with clear stop signs, speed limits, and permissible directions of flow. When the limits of a system are few, fair, and simple, they will, to a large extent, much like the movements along actual physical roads, be self-regulating. The main reason why clear limits of this kind are so difficult to establish is that many in positions of power profit greatly from the corruption. If roads were run by bandits, we wouldn't look to the bandits to reform themselves. an independent entity would have to draw up a new set of limits and then enforce them. The key point is that because the limits are few, they are known to all. And because they are seen by the vast majority of people to be fair and to their own advantage, such laws are easily enforced. After all, who would put up with highways where a privileged few are allowed to drive as fast and as aggressively and as recklessly as they want? 6. The outmoded religious beliefs of the past are the divisive factor of the new millennium. Every invocation of a god or Allah or Vishnu excites the passions in an essentially irrational way, and thereby threatens the calm neutrality and reason necessary for both freedom and democracy to flourish. In marked contrast, the sure sign of both the truly scientific and religious culture is not that it in any way appeals to a higher power, but rather that it refuses to tolerate conflict, contradiction, or waste. Well, in this part of the podcast, I'd like to just mention our featured link of the week at Picture Poems. You can get to that by going to picture-poems.com/links. And this week, we're featuring Dr. Helen Caldicott, someone I remember from back in the latter part of the 70s when I was working with the Lawrence Livermore Conversion Project. She's one of the leading anti-nuclear activists worldwide, an environmental health advocate. And she has an excellent weekly radio program coming from Australia called If You Love This Planet.
Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott. And in this program, we talk about the great...
Well, there you have it. So it's a highly recommended program. Leaf. Perhaps leaves fall simply to carry away all that we thought we needed to say. And perhaps trees in this way purify themselves each year, knowing that there's no thought so large that it cannot be writ upon the smooth, plain surface of but a single leaf. Well, no Picture Poem podcast would be complete without offering a new translation. I'd like to do now a fairly early poem of Rilke's from Das Buch der Bilder, the Book of Images. And I'll do that in the normal way, first in German and then in English. Here you have it. Eingang, entrance. Eingang. Wer du auch seist, am Abend tritt hinaus aus deiner Stube, drin du alles weißt. Als letzter vor der Ferne liegt dein Haus, wer du auch seist. Mit deinen Augen, welche müde kaum von der verbrauchten Schwellen sich befreien, hebst du ganz langsam einen schwarzen Baum und stellst ihn vor den Himmel schlank allein. Und hast die Welt gemacht, und sie ist groß und wie ein Wort, das noch im Schweigen reift. Und wie dein Wille ihren Sinn begreift, lassen sie deine Augen zärtlich los. Entrance. Whoever you are, step out into the evening, out of your living room where everything is so known. Your house stands as the last thing before a great space, whoever you are. With your eyes, which in their fatigue can just barely free themselves from the used up, worn out thresholds. Very slowly, lift a single black tree and place it against the sky, slender and alone. With this you have made the world, and it is large and like a word that is still ripening in silence. And just as your will grasps their meaning, they in turn will let go delicately of your eyes. A new word for sound. Somebody help me here. How are we to describe natural essentials like good air, good soil, good water? And well, here we have a little but serious problem. Good sound. The difference between them. Along a trail through a high cottonwood meadow, horse mint and death camas grow side by side, the one healing herb, the other poison root. Such is the strangeness of the way things are. Sure sign of evil is a dark force of nature, out to do us in. Quite doubtful. More the ever-present possibility as we cross paths with the good and the bad of not knowing the difference between them. Next up in the podcast is a new set of poems from the series I've been working on for some time now, called On the Wayside. One of the key features of that set of poems is its structure on the printed page, as well as its rhythmical style of movement. They're all based on a kind of simple computer program that spits out fractal stanzas with a fairly complex rule-like structure. That's for those who are interested in that sort of thing. But if you listen to it, if you listen to them, what you hear are geometric rhythms, which I've been fascinated with ever since I first saw a flower. In the most simple sense, they're basically just combinations of twos and threes, like all of music. But it is a completely different sense of rhythm. The things are that are considered relevant are very different than what you would hear in a normal counted syllabic stanza or something like that. They're based on density and length of phrase and more general concepts of time. And in this new series, they all have the same structure of 162 steps divided into five stanzas. And when I actually perform them, you'll hear a major difference in the what you in music call the density of how quickly the phrases follow each other in the lengths of the silences, which somehow articulates and goes together with the meaning. The theme of all the poems, I think I'm doing three of them here, is O River of Knots, a part of the Columbia watershed. I had the opportunity to visit this last spring, mostly in the month of May, between Hood River and up to the port of Umatilla, the present border between Washington and Oregon. I might just mention that in the background we're hearing Giovanni Carmagnola with the Venice Baroque Orchestra, with Marco Marcon conducting. What's remarkable about this music, I think, if you really start to listen to it, it's the perfect harmony between simplicity and complexity. The bass line is played by the orchestral violins. The Germans would have never done that. They would have added something. But it's just a simple bass line played by the high violins. And the job of the soloist is to weave an extraordinarily baroque melody of graces in and around and above the bass line. From On the Wayside, new poems. Randomness repeated does not look like chance. Beer can. 5 cents apiece is what we the people pay the man with his garbage bag full of cans. Gathered along the shoulder of a noisy, filthy, awful highway. For 30 years, the cans have bought 5 cents more of freedom, a sure, certain insurance for the down and out. from their cars. Others watched the man pick up his cans, one by one, like metal mushrooms. From the safe, fuel-injected time-space of their speeding vehicles, a faint voice comforts, saying, "This can't happen to me." But who can say? Economies blow out, much like tires, always at the peak of the performance. Then boom, bang, collapse. Hard times lie just outside the locked doors. Ask the man with the cans. 5 cents each. We pay. Search Google. It's always been so that the one who controls water controls the kingdom, and the one who controls the flow, the source of information, controls thought. But now, the dam at Fort Dalles powers data about data. A new kind of meta-control, a thirst for power that drinks rivers whole. The Dalles, once natural meeting place, now hub of North American squalor. The perfect site to mine data for quick cash. Like water, data flows, can be filtered, turned off, colored red, blue, black, invisible. First, we ask the river to give us cheap cans. Now, we ask the river to connect up the thoughts of the world. Water, like data, can be used for power. Let's hope for the best. Damn. It always begins with a straight line drawn at a distance, a line of force, of control, of thought slamming straight into the order of things, a potential that is wasted, just spilling into the sea, in thought just spilling, a tight, high knot in the arteries of the pulsing earth. A knot now filling a vast lake with pressure, spinning turbines that are heard from here to Alaska, spinning turbines, power of thought, a force of control, from here to Alaska, electric nights, big city, nights without stars, rivers without fish. Fish so thick, a horse would not cross, water so clear, you could see stones of bright gold dance on the bottom. O river of knots. Slam. It took Africa, the pulse of a whole continent, to shake us alive out of the trance of twos and threes. Set in harsh stone by Bach and Mozart. Yet even Africa could not stop the fall back into the soft chairs of the bourgeoisie. great rebirth of rhythm, damned from day one. By the so dazzling flood of disco dollars, sounds that sell soap on radio, the supermarket of TV. Why is four so square? Captains of industry that beat their rock and roll drum in the time of bye, bye, bye. Hammers that pound flatten dead the soul. Tune in MTV, cheap cheeseburger of trash sound. Born to be wild in a cage wired shut by the tyranny of four. Try to be serious. The next piece we're going to hear is performed by the picture poem Voice Computer. And the reason I prefer it that way is that it's an essay, about 3 or 4 minutes long. And I like the neutral, very calm, philosophical, and serious tone of voice. And the title of the piece is Terra Madre, Life Body of the Earth, in the Synergy of Three.
In a dream, or in a kind of half-dream-like state, I'm not quite sure which, I recently had this figure come to me in a strikingly vivid, forceful way. I got up straight away in the middle of a stormy night to write it down in my notebook. It is a very simple vision of Mother Earth, or Terra Madre, as it presented itself in symbolic form. Here, we have a translation of the figure. The message is clear. The physical life body of the Earth, what a scientist of Western culture would call the biosphere, is actually our own larger, in a very general way, life body. That is how I experience it, with the breath being the air. The skin, the living surface of the soil, the blood, the great circulatory cycle of water, and hair and fur, the grasslands and forestlands, respectively. And finally, spirit as represented by sound, or the soundscape of the whole. I was especially struck by the latter spirit-sound relationship, as it is both in a way obvious to a musician like myself, and yet, strangely, untellingly ignored by the present highly mechanized society. For me, the figure approximates what I sense in a direct, simple, emotional way, yet at the same time open to rational consideration, as self-evidently so, or true. In this brief sketch, I would only like to call attention to two implications of the diagram. First, it's what I think of as a kind of negative of positive interrelationship represented by the triangle. In the single phrase, as a general principle of the synergy of three, abuse one, wreck three. That is, cut down the forest, and you'll wreck both the water cycle and the atmosphere. Treat the atmosphere like a sewer, and you'll wreck the watershed and the forest. Dam the rivers, and you'll kill the forest and dry out the air, etc. etc. Note also that the principle has an important positive formulation, improve one, heal three. Bring back the forest cover, and improve the health of the watershed and the quality of the air, etc. Second, the principle of the synergy of three addresses the issues of ethical culpability for harm done, as well as the ethical responsibility to act decisively to stop such harm in a fundamental way. In countries with an established tradition of the rule of law, this last statement is well established for individual citizens. This is a great achievement that deserves our sustained vigilance. On the other hand, when it comes to the earth and the land, our ethical awareness has taken a backseat to what is generally thought of as economic development. So instead of a life body of the land worthy of unambiguous protections, we think of a set of disconnected, essentially replaceable materials which can be used, owned, and sold without limit, just like bolts and gears and fuel. Thus, when we say, for example, land rights or water rights, the first thing that comes to mind is the rights of individuals to own and use these as resources, and not the rights of protection of the land and streams themselves. In the view of the synergy of three being discussed here, this is a very profound error of perception and thought, a kind of illness of consciousness, really, because it is a mistake that is made repeatedly and wantonly, which is in urgent need of examination and healing. That is for me the clear and simple message of the Terra Madre figure. The earth is our mother, our greater life body. So when I see, for example, a photo of a farmer in Ohio pumping his soil full of anhydrous ammonia, my gut reaction is no different than when I hear of a human being subjected to the torture of waterboarding for whatever reason. Good God, this must stop, now. I stand by the clarity and simplicity of this view.
Terror research deficit. Taxes, democracy, Afghanistan. Social security.
That was the little micro-essay, Terra Madre, Life Body of the Earth in the Synergy of Three. If you'd like to see the drawings that are referred to, they're on the web, on the Picture Poem homepage. You can click on the link there. The final section of this month's podcast is a quartet of what I'm calling long-line sonnets. There are four pieces from a new series. This is a new variation on an old form. As always, what is primary for me here is the movement of the sound itself as a kind of music. Very much secondary is how the poem is written down or notated on the page. Indeed, the notation is simply a kind of elementary score. No more and no less, just as if it were intended for flute or voice or keyboard. So here we have it, four new long line sonnets. For those interested in that sort of thing, in contrast to the Wayside poems, which are radically different in length, these are all just about exactly 1 minute and 20 seconds. The Vagabond of the Grand Exil, an appreciation for Maurice Chappé. There he stands on the dam he helped to build, defiant voice of the river that no longer flows, spirit caretaker of the eternal snows, witness of a great valley's slow but steady decline. Gone are the meadows, gone are the shepherd's huts, gone are the silent ways of alpine winter. The stars of Orion no longer guide us to the chamois retreat, to the slopes of the rusty rose. All fade in the bright lights of rented chalets, in the endless highways of sugar snow. Swish goes the scythe of the banker in tourist land, whetted on the bent backs of mountain farmers. Tout fini, he cries, the words fracturing in crystals of frozen ice, a rainbow avalanche of light. Fasnacht, the night of mountain carnival. Drumming out the bad spirits of mean man winter, screeching at them with a whore of horns and pipes, marching down cobblestone streets and under bridges where monstrous demons tend to congregate. This is the music of the anti-divine, anarchy's orgy against an excess of sanitas, recompense for the far too much of not enough, where all is fire, all is noise, where all is chaos, when Kronos readies to castrate the patriarch, the Pope belches and strokes the buttocks of his favorite Swiss guard. Let the wretches have their night of fun. But the children know better. Faces painted for a holy war, they take to the streets. This is the night that shall balance all the rest. The lute. O come again, sweet love, soft rounded belly of wood, resonance rich with bright stars and dark loam, pure instrument of the unseen platonic realm. By what strange demonic twist of fate did your fine form fall into such disfavor? Like a queen, much beloved, yet banished to a faraway isle, you suffered eternities of turbulent seas, waves of sharp steel strings, of harsh, amplified sounds. So now, come again, sweet love, let us there open your velvet protective case, let down your youthful brains, and let the coming age find new spirit on your strings. Let the recluse tune your pegs by mountain springs. Poets find new rhythms to match your most dissonant chords. And bards play to kings bent on war, as you sing of peace. Thank you. The Moons of Galileo, a long line sonnet. Io, Europa, Ganymedes, Callisto, messengers of the stars, rough surface of the moon, eternal lights now circling with predictable regularity round a new radical idea. Brightest object in a great awakening's night sky. So much for Dante, so much for Aristotle. Grand book of the turnings of the heavenly orbs. O celestial fact, one of how many yet, silent for centuries that suddenly explodes. So much for Rome, so much for its dogma, its torture. Even the power of all the marble and gold in the universe could not cloud the new lens of truth, that scripture was wrong and Copernicus right. It's shining above for all to see. Lux eterna, indeed. Drawing circles. What's an island but a circle we draw around some part of the world? A line of difference, of demarcation, separating that which is inside from that which is out. It all begins, of course, with an actual physical island, separated by its coastline from the sea. From here, the idea of island proceeds to be transformed in thought, easily and seamlessly, by the miracle of metaphor, into the realm of the more subtle and unseen. Thus we have islands of beauty in an ocean of ugliness, islands of security in a sea of violence, islands of peace and tranquility in a non-stop turbulent flood of data in misinformation. The width of the circle of these metaphorical aisles is entirely of our own making. We may carry the circle in our own breast, or it may expand to embrace the entire world or beyond. Imagine for a moment a spaceship full of friendly beings from some unknown outback of the universe, first coming in sight of Earth. They would almost certainly be utterly amazed at our planet's beauty, the striking blue of its seas, the amazing white flow forms of the clouds of its atmosphere. To them, I'm very sure, it would seem an island paradise, an extraordinary circle of life in a vast ocean of orbiting, waterless, rough rocks. It might do much to attune our own thinking of Earth's unique place in space if we were to draw our own metaphorical circle in much the same way.